which problem notion they would be influenced by, not by a virtualized object, would be influenced by problem notion Z. One is known, which is a classic count, and the other one is a new effect which we found, which is the bias. Okay, so first of all, why do we care about non-Gaussianity? Basically, we care about non-Gaussianity because the best probe we have of the early universe, which is like CMB as you know, this double magma, basically is Gaussian. Okay, it's very, and this is actually turned out to be very important because as we know, the detail analysis of this map basically strongly support inflation. In the sense that, for example, this means several things. Be it, for example, that the geometry of the universe is flat up to about 3%, okay, using the double map and HST. It also means that the spectral index of the parameter perturbation is nearly scaling invariant. Okay. Also, actually, as a matter of fact, the limit of analyzing this map, you can put a limit of the non-Gaussian contribution to the power spectrum, to the variance if you want. And this limit is about 0.1%. So you see, it's really well constrained. And actually, this is, you can say that basically, these data sets support inflation almost as much by because of flatness as because of Gaussianity. And we totally care, we totally take Gaussianity for granted right now. But when you think about it, it's really not obvious that this distribution, the distribution of temperature fluctuation is actually that Gaussian. Okay? So it's very important to keep that in mind. And as a consequence, it's important to test that and to look for the next level, the next order, which is basically the tiny amount of non-Gaussianity that is predicted by inflation. Okay? So how does it work? Basically, the simplest inflationary model predicts small, but non-zero non-Gaussianity and all. It's usually parameterized by this expansion, where phi is the bounding potential, and you basically have, to this potential, you have a quadratic term whose amplitude is parameterized by FNL. And it was introduced actually a while ago. And then, and typically you expect this FNL to be of order one for the simplest model, okay? But as people work, as people know here, like for example, Andrew has a model about that, you also more sophisticated model inflation predict FNL of as high as 100, okay? And this is interesting because, of course, current constraint from WMAP using temperature reflection, so the three-point function of the temperature field I mentioned before, typically it's about 100, okay, for at 95% level. And you can expect, from the CMB side, you can expect to go down to about 10.
So is that 0.1% of the variance corresponds to 100 in this FNL?
Exactly, yeah, that's okay, and if you look at this, after the warm-up that David gave us, if you look at this, you will understand right away that if this distribution is Gaussian, adding this term, you would skew slightly the distribution, and so you would directly affect the number of rare peaks in your distribution. And this rare peaks is, of course, what matters because these rare peaks is what's going to give rise to the massive objects in the late universe. Okay, and there is a lot of various estimates of this effect. I mean, this is not new, but most of these effects actually rely on try to quantify the effect on the mass function and actually rely on the cross-sector formalism, which, as we know, is a good qualitative tool, but it's not very precise because it's about an order of magnitude off for the relevant scales. Okay, and so it seems like there is no way you can avoid really to do n-body simulation to really study that, and so that's what we set up to do. So the point of my talk will be following. I will first describe the mass function. So we try to come up with a practical and simple fitting formula of FNL using n-body simulation. And then we looked at large-scale halo bias in FNL cosmology, and both from an analytical point of view and from an numerical point of view. Okay, and then I will discuss the abstraction consequences. So is it difficult to, actually, how can we take into account this FNL cosmology in numerical simulation? It's actually fairly easy, okay, you have to say. You just take a Gaussian field, phi as a Gaussian field, you add a quadratic term, you apply the Fourier transform, the transfer function in Fourier space to go wherever you want in where you want to start your initial condition at. You apply the Lovich approximation as usual to displace your field, and then you evolve it. So it's really well defined, straightforward. Well, it's not exactly totally straightforward, but because you could see that because of mod coupling, you could see because you are squaring the field, you could be worried about finite volume effect because you are, coupling all the modes. And we tested for this, and that turned out to be unimportant in this problem. And to do that, and then to evolve this this initial condition time, we use actually a very nice embedded code, P3N code, written by Alexio Rokoff, which is publicly available. So I really encourage you to check it out. It's pretty, fast.
Yeah. Okay, and so what's the result? You also test for resolution effects like that?
Sure. Yeah. So we have 256 cubes.
Okay, one sure.
Okay, so what do we get? And so this is a slice in one simulation, okay, in five different simulations with different FNL. Of course, we use the same initial condition so that we have exactly the same phase structure. And the fact that we use the same phase structure allows you to identify by eye the same object and see how they evolve according to FNL. And for example, if you look at this guy here, okay, so this is a big guy, massive cluster, okay. And what you see for FNF minus 5,000, which is okay, just pedagogical value, what you see is that the more when FNN increases, basically these guys get more massive. Okay, so it gets more and more evolved, which makes sense because you are skewing the distribution, so the high density peaks are even higher density initially, so it makes sense. And sure.
When you say same initial conditions, so the actual potential is different.
But let's say this stage is the same. The first initial, first phi is the same, and then the quadratic term you add is different.
Okay, so the Zell-Lovich approximation is done with respect to gas.
No, you have to do it after that. But this is it's a Zell-Lovich correction. It's a very small effect, so it wouldn't affect. It wouldn't affect these big guys. That's why you can still say the same. It's really Zell-Lovich correction at let's say z of 50, right? And then you evolve. So it's really minor effect.
What's the WMAT limit on the low side for FNL?
Minus,
is it also ground minus?
Minus 46 and 214.
But you sort of implied that the theories all give high values for FNL.
No, I didn't mean to imply that.
So there's the different shapes of FNL, right?
Yes, so we just...
The equilateral shape has a much bigger.
Yeah, I think the simplest.
So
your FNL is constant, but you need shape-dependent
models. How large can you get
on those
clusters?
Yeah.
So, it can grow. So the WMAP analysis is done over a small range of scales, and it's done assuming a constant value of FNL. So, presumably, if they analyze the scale effect, it's going to grow. There's that data point which
pins
it down there, and then the only bounds on
these
scales are like several thousand.
Because it could rise, the FNL could rise to go to small scales.
Exactly. Okay. It's worth pointing out that in a lot of inflation models, it produces that gas.
And it's not described by this potential description.
This is not degenerate with just the amplitude of the power factor?
Well, the amplitude, as I said, is fairly fully effective. It's 0.11 the sum on the amplitude
scales.
Don't really
change
much.
So increasing FNL, they're two different primordial parameters. Right?
I mean, they're two different. We tweaked sigma to all the models the same for all of those, but it's a very small correction.
But it's not degenerate if you, FNL seems to be increasing the amount of structure. You couldn't dial down sigma 8 or something and cancel it.
It's not entirely degenerate. It trades off. So
yeah, you could. I mean, to some extent, because I mean, varying amplitude is like varying in time, and so you see that this effect is basically massive structure are more evolved when the FNL grows up. And on the other hand, if you look at the void, for example, this large void here, you see that as we expect, also underdurance regions are also less evolved, which means that they are less empty. For example, the higher FNL, the less evolved part of the structure. And for example, here you can still see the grid lines of the initial condition. Right? So it's really having the data. And so that's what we see. And you see, so if you quantify that and you build a mass function for all those halos, that's what you have. So this is a mass function, so the number of cluster as a function of mass. For various simulations, so the dashed yellow line is the identical prediction, so the Jenkins formula, okay, the fit to simulation, so it has to work on case two. And this is various mass function for FNM running from plus 500 to minus 500. And you see, if you plot the ratio of these guys, you see it's about a factor of few effects at a high mass N. Okay, so it's quite a big effect. But also, you also know that observing these guys pretty bad, and there are not many of them. But still, you see that it gives you an order of magnitude. Okay, so now what we try to do is that we try to use a fact, I mean, we did that on purpose, of course, we use the same phase for the same initial phase, so that basically you can identify clusters with different FNM. And what we did, basically, we had a simple scheme to match clusters, so using their particle content, okay, to match a cluster from the FNL equals zero simulation of mass M0 to another cluster in a FNL non equal to zero whose mass is equal to MF, okay? And we're interested in actually building the distribution of MF even M0. And the reason for that will become clear later. And this distribution, you can plot it this way, okay? So here you have MF M0, you have a scatter plot, and you see, for example, for FNL 500, as you expect, you see a trend to move upwards in mass, okay? So the cluster is going to be more massive as FNL increase. Okay, so if you make a bin, so in these two lines, if you bin this distribution PMF at given M0, you bin in M0 and you obtain for negative plus positive FNL and negative FNL, you obtain this kind of distribution. So it's a bit noisy, okay? But basically you see some trend here. So this is the ratio of MF over M0 minus one.
So the power spectrum changes when you add FNL, right?
Yes, but really little.
Really little?
Yes.
Okay.
You wouldn't, I mean, yeah, at power, I said it's about 0.1%, so it's really small.
The change in the power is 0.1%.
Yes.
So it's not due to that.
Yeah, no, it's not due to that. Okay, and so, and you see basically, you see a trend, and you see that the peak of distribution is shifting, so basically, mass moves up. And you also see that this relation is a bit noisy, and you see this tail here, which comes from the fact that actually small clusters will have a big jump in mass because they will tend to merge with massive guys. Okay, and so in our matching, it does introduce this kind of noise. Conversely, for FNL negative, clusters tend to split up. So if some clusters will have some, you expect to have this tail here because this is to come from the disruption of clusters. So in our matching, you have a big jump in mass. Okay. So anyway, so within this measurement, we have this approximation. We have a handle on this function. And what we'll do, which is very crude but actually enough, is to approximate this distribution by a Gaussian. Okay. So it's very bad, but actually it works well enough for us. Okay. Adam?
So I guess when FNL is 5,000, then the effect on the initial power is 5%.
Yeah. But we 5,000 is really like an extreme case, which is, I mean, basically, you know, we're interested in a plus minus 100. Okay, and so, and if you consider this distribution to be a Gaussian, this ML given M0, you can fit for, we can with an analytic fit for the mean shift and also the variance of this dispersion. And actually, this, it turns out that this relation are a good fit to the data, as you can see. Let's say a good enough fit to the data, okay? So it's a bit, and this scales with sigma m, which is important as compared to previous work. So where sigma m is a power spectrum, and is a variance of the density fields, moves over a scale, including a mass m. And we determine this coefficient. It's linear in FNL as we expect, but this is a small correction. And we fit this coefficient on simulation, and we don't really worry about it. So, and why do we do that? And actually the idea of this approach is basically to compute a mass function for a function of FNL, which is universal in terms of all the parameters.
I don't think I understand this. Mm-hmm. This is sigma of m, or
this is the mass of the cluster in the FNL non equal to zero simulations, mm-hmm, over the mass of the cluster in the FNL equal to zero simulation.
So in what sense? So before he asked if this was degenerate with sigma 8. Doesn't this say that it's directly degenerate with sigma 8?
Not when you compare it with the CMB.
No, it's not, because it's a mass decay.
It's a wide range in scale.
No, right.
You got the dark energy, you got neutrinos. I mean,
yeah.
CMB can measure everything, right?
No, But it's not that the fixed sigma F, but because this is not a constant, or I'm not sure. Why is it this direction? I don't know.
Because I see FNL times sigma 8 getting carried around everywhere, multiplied by a bunch of other.
But sigma 8 appears on every place as well, so.
Not yet.
Not here, but other places.
Where else? Where?
I mean, galaxy.
Galaxy doesn't understand.
But
what's sigma
8? Or that
there's a galaxy guy, he can tell us what sigma 8 is.
So but the motivation for this why we care about this function here is that basically using this formalism we can come with universal fitting formula for the mass function for general cosmology using the well-known fitting formula for Gaussian cosmology. Okay, for example, I'm using this simple integral. This is what we measure and fit adjusted for. And this will be, for example, the Jenkins mass function. And so basically you factorize all the cosmological dependence on this function and you factor FNF dependence in this function here. And then it's a fairly robust and simple formalism. And it's also very practical. It's very easy to compute. Okay, even. And so does it work? Actually, it works reasonably well. For example, here you have the ratio of the Gaussian, non-Gaussian to Gaussian mass function for FNF plus 500 and FNF minus 500 at various redshift. And this is the solid line are the fitting formula, and the simulation points are the measure points are the points of the mass. So it's not perfect, and basically it's accurate at about 10%. And so there are many ways in which we could refine this formula, right? So basically, I assume Gaussian for Fourier distribution, so we can improve on that. But it's basically pointless because the accuracy of this formula is as accurate as the initial Jenkins formula, which is accurate up to 10%. So basically, it's not perfect, but it's good enough for given our current knowledge of the general mass function.
There are different simulations by different groups.
Yeah.
There are convergence on this?
No, there are not convergence actually. So there are two papers. So one, let's discuss one because it's poor resolution, poor simulation, so that's constant, it's correct. And then there's Grossi et al., which is a group of Matarese who can publish some results. And it's not clear whether we agree with the simulation because they use different cosmological parameters and they don't plot exactly the same thing, so we couldn't get convinced either way. So simulation-wise, it's unclear. On the theoretical side, like the fitting formulas are prescribed, we cannot disagree with them. And actually, it's this dashed line here, it's their prediction, okay? And you see that we tend to disagree with them and our simulations disagree with their predictions. So that's the current status.
Sorry, that's using the same input.
Yes, this will be the same input. So
but they show better agreement.
They show better argument, yes. But
between those their simulations and
the fitting formula. Yeah, but it's really hard to understand their formalism and we wouldn't be able to reproduce exactly their stuff. So it's anyway, that's the status, so that's it for the mass function part. And so this is it's simulation based, so it's not very it's not that useful actually in scale. But this is much neater, and this is all new, and I think much more interesting. Okay? So the next question we try to address, so we can count halos, but we can also measure the clustering properties, okay, and especially on large scales. And so before measuring this clustering property, we can try to evaluate what we should see. And for example, as we saw before, we parameterize the non-Gaussian is this way. So this is the Gaussian field, and we have this property. Okay? And this becomes an implied potential. And so you want to relate that. This is a potential. You want to relate that to the density field, which is what we care about. And you will use a Poisson equation. Okay? So you take this operator, and you have this equation. Okay, this is general. And writing things this way, actually, you first realize that since this field here is a Gaussian field, you know how to compute exactly. You can know how to compute, for example, the PDF of the non-Gaussian field, the density field, which would be then, so which is basically this proportional to this, okay? Because phi is Gaussian, so you know to compute exactly the joint distribution of phi, which is derivative on the second derivative, okay? Think about it in Fourier space, this is phi, k phi, and I k phi, and minus k squared phi, and so if phi is Gaussian, you can compute this thing, and you know exactly what to compute. And for example, for the skewness, you end up with this simple expression. Now this is very easy, and actually, it's so it does agree for example, this thing agrees with the Matteri-Zeitel group, but it's just you use that in three lines, whereas the formalism is way more complicated. And the next thing you want to do is basically you want to do what you're interested in. This is for the density field in general. What you want to do, you care about the peaks in the density field, okay, which is what would give rise to the clusters, or the cluster themselves. And so for the clusters themselves, actually, you are near maximum, so you can neglect this gradient here, okay? So this term gets very small, so you end up with these two terms here. These two terms give you this equation. So you can write non-Gaussian field.
That's not true, because, I mean, the clusters are still following the bulk flow of the everything, right? So that means the gradient of phi doesn't vanish.
That's just relative to del square.
Wow. Yeah, it's not exactly zero, but it's good, much dominant as compared to this term, for sure.
It does?
Yeah. Well, you'll see, this term. Okay, so this is a very handy formula. Okay, so this is it's a simple result, but it turns out to be very important. And so, using this formula, it's very easy to compute a peak correlation function. So I won't lay down the detail, but again, you can use a usual formalism for Gimmick case type. If you define a critical density threshold, that's great. Okay, you can write that the correlation function for two peaks, so two points in Grignion space with density is higher than that's great. You can write it this way, okay, where VL squared is the usual Gaussian bias, and you have this correction term. You can also write it in Fourier space easily, okay, in this term. And you see that what matters here is the correlation between phi and delta. Okay, and what you see using this equation is basically that's a shift in bias as compared to what you would expect for a Gaussian field goes like that. Okay, so it goes like the amplitude of the initial bias times FNL times delta crit, okay, which is the usual delta crit. And you have this factor which comes directly from the Poisson equation, okay, that you put in here if you want. And what is remarkable about this term, of course, is the one where k squared term, okay? Which means that even though you are on, this will be valid on linear scales, but because of FNL, you end up with a very strong scale dependence. So the one over k squared, and you also have a very well defined k dependence, which is very interesting, okay? And of course, this goes against everything we are used to thinking about, which is on linear scale, we expect a totally scale independent bias. And why do we think, well, first, that's what we see in real data, but why we are expecting that is because basically the argument goes as people who care about the bias and cared about the bias in the early 90s, you consider them for the galaxy formation process, you consider it to be a Gaussian local process. So the delta, the density field of your galaxy is a function of the underlying dark matter, general density field. And it's a local function. So you Taylor extend, you assume that the average of the delta galaxy is constant, and you end up with a linear term, okay? And which is what we see, and it works totally well. The problem is that as soon as you introduce this FNL correction, process is not local anymore, because potential, and you square the potential and it's the gravitational potential. So that basically this hypothesis is not true anymore. And you end up with this strong scale dependence. On the other hand, if you want to test this reasoning, you can try to simulate an Gaussian entity that would go like that. You don't square the potential, but you square the density field itself. And then, we actually did it in simulation, and then you end up again, this time with a scale independent bias, okay? Which is this doesn't from the reasoning. Okay, so
but that non-locality. So are there models that produce that non-locality? Because usually when I hear non-locality, I think, oh well, then it probably isn't produced by any physical knowledge.
Well, this is, I mean, non-locality here comes from the phi square.
Right, but I'm asking, is there a physical model that produces that kind of non-Gaussian? Or did you just pull that?
No, that's a generic.
It is generically produced.
Modulo the scale dependence of FNL. That's false. So that's what inflation people think about.
Yeah,
okay.
These
curvaton models, they give.
Sorry.
In the curvaton models, you make that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's pretty generic. It's the next leading.
Interesting.
The point is, it was causal when it was made, which is in the
right. Exactly.
And so it looks like causal now, like the Baryonyx oscillations, right?
Right.
So. And this is neat because this is like simple, it's fairly simple analytics, and it's all BBKS formalism. So it's always a pleasure to use this thing. So, which I don't use much actually nowadays. Anyway, so how does it work in practice? So you have this formula. What we plot here is the cross power spectra between halo and matter. Okay, so we define a halo catalog. We keep only the particle within this halo, and we then measure the cross power spectrum between this particle and the density, the underlying density field, and this is what we have here, okay? This is for FNL equals zero, okay? This is for various FNL, and this is an
identical prediction. The cross power spectrum between galaxies and dark matter?
Halos, yes.
Halos and galaxies. Halos and dark matter.
That's right, okay. And for a given mass range of halos, because it's not all of halos, it's like the kind of certain type halos. But it's actually about energy scale. And this is, so the dashed line are the theoretical prediction using this formula. And triangle here, wither about what we measure in simulations. And you see that it really works remarkably well. And what is, and here's the ratio if you want. And what's remarkable here also is that in fact, there is no free parameter, okay? So there is only one free parameter here, which is you wouldn't consider it a free parameter, which is the decrease, okay? It's a critical density you choose to compute everything. And we are doing very well with them. So in principle, for spherical collapse, you would take this to be 160, 168, okay? But you know that for this mass range, basically, the fact that you're not exactly spherical will change this value a bit, and instead of a decrease of 2, which is what is really recommended in the literature, you end up fitting very well what we observe. Okay. Initially, we were ready to fudge a little bit with the umbilical distance, but it turned out to be not necessary. It works really well.
We did fudge a little bit.
We played with this, but no, just, I mean, this, no, initially, but then we played because we were off by factor 2. There was a mistake in the computation. But what I've thought here, there is no fudge factor, you just take the delta creed of 2, and that's it.
You took the delta creed of 2.
Yeah. But it's also reasonable. I mean, delta creed of 3 is what you would expect for this mass range. So we learn on the fly, but at the end of the day, it works well. But anyway, I would still be very happy if we had to fudge and compute on this relation, because you don't, I mean, but it's fine. So that's a remarkable thing here.
So the 1 over k square.
Yeah.
And so this is just coming because the non-Gaussian entities and the potential non-density.
Yeah.
Density.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you know,
that makes it utterly different than sigma.
Yeah, that's the thing. At this point,
it's definitely not.
This is way more powerful than what I presented before. And so I'll come with this to you.
It's crazy. Can you already rule out minus 100?
Yeah. So I'll show that. More or less.
But these are already all consistent with one, aren't they? All those points are like. Okay, the lower plot, this is all are consistent with one, aren't they?
This one here?
Yeah. All the points are consistent with one. I don't understand why.
It's the error bar.
No, it's just the error bar. That's just wait. No, but you can look at here, right? Let's say.
But that's just the power spectrum. So if you expect it to get the power. If the bias doesn't do much, then you get the power spectrum right, but. I mean, that's really your prediction. The lower one is the difference between.
No, because in practice you measure the bias power spectrum. So in practice you measure, here we have P halo mass, right? In practice you measure P halo halo. If you take the power spectrum of LRGs, you measure P halo halo. So you have actually this effect squared.
Why don't you plot P halo halo?
Because it's a good, it's a better measurement actually of the bioconciliation. There's a special noise.
It's actually shot noise on this larger scale?
Probably not on this large scale, but
yeah. Then shouldn't they be the same?
It should be the, yeah, it should be the four, it should be the same. On small scales, it's shot noise.
I know the answer from Neil is that there is, it doesn't, or there, it looks like there's noise in the halo version, and he didn't seem to be sure why.
Yes, but the fact that this, halo matters things, I mean, for me it's fine, right? The fact that this halo matter correlation works. This is directly in the bias, so.
This, but it's not what you expect. I'm just.
Oh, yes, yeah, okay.
It's not far from what you observed, correct?
Yes, so, but then seeing for the both for eyes, that would be what you expect.
It just is, it seems like you should understand the halo. Why if yeah. It is different. Why?
If you get to square those curves, it really works.
Yeah, it's really weird. Sure. Okay, so, and so what are the constraints you can, so with this kind of effect, what are the constraints you can, so those are rough estimates, not, none of this is a detailed constraint. Those are just rough estimates of the effect. And basically, to measure the large scale bias, so for a new way, and pretty pretty unique way to measure FNL. And basically, you expect effectively, it's very easy to separate the effect from anything else because you have a very specific K and Z dependence. And it's pretty hard to think about anything on this scale that will, you know, have this such a scale dependence and also the Z dependence because it really goes like, it does increase with Z.
So, I'm sorry to stop you again. So, you said you test different box sizes.
Yeah.
And you don't see the box size.
Yeah, for example, here there are two different. This is a triangle of 12,024 cubes. This is 512 cubes. So that do everyone. And to go large scale, we've made gigabytes.
No, but the same FNL, you've done it.
Yeah, and so with the same FNL, we checked and there's no. It's stable, yes.
Okay, so at some place I should expect to see the box size effect, and I don't see.
Yeah,
that.
You don't see it here.
Certainly in the past, you can evolve linear theory nodes perfectly right up to the fundamental node.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, is there any link between how the bias is scale dependent and what happens at the FNL scale dependent? In other words, could you dial them in opposite directions and cancel them?
If FNL was scale dependent,
yeah.
Well, that's what we want to study.
But, no, I mean, I know what happens if you make FNL scale dependent.
Yeah.
The question is,
is
the bias
for some other reason, you mean?
Right, I mean, does the bias, does the scale dependence of the bias track in some meaningful way what's going on with the scale dependence of FNL?
I don't know the answer to that. It's not easy to see it for. I think that's what we should have done.
Right. I think we know star formation is less efficient as you go to the most massive galaxies.
Right,
so you
I
end
mean,
up
this,
with
is,
that.
This is the question.
Yeah, it's just
gastrophysics. This bias. The bottom line being that unless you can find some way to couple the clustering of galaxies, to have the potential affect the clustering of galaxies, like the large scale potential, which seems just physically impossible, a large scale mode in the potential change the clustering of. I mean, the number of halos you form on small scales, you can't make this kind of thing.
Because it's phi delta. Because it's basically phi delta.
It's that phi that makes this inverse k. Any sort of finite range non-locality gives you something that's proportional to k, or k squared.
Mm-hmm.
So that it doesn't, it still goes back to linear theory bias on large scales, up to a shot.
Okay, so assuming this function, you can estimate what you should be able to measure using this technique. And as I said, like the KSD dependence is very well defined, so it should be easy to separate out from anything else, you know. And for example, for LHC survey, with this kind of density, if you had a full sky survey, let's say out to 0.7, you can expect this type of constraint on FNL, okay, which is pretty good because you have to remember that Planck tells us is order of 10, right? So it's comparable to Planck. if you do a full sky energy survey, which is not very deep. Okay, so it works pretty well. Also, this effect could be a systematics for VAO survey, okay? Because if you take your density power spectrum and you multiply by the strong scale dependence, on which is what you measure, you will just tend to shift your bias, your peak a little bit, and we computed that for FNF 100, it will shift the first peak by about factor 0.5%, okay? Which corresponds to about 1-2% in W. So this is a rough estimate. On the other hand, this should be very easy to account for this effect because again, it's the K and the dependence is like nothing else. Okay, and this also is important because it does affect the. So you expect, for example, nonlinear correction of this type of effect to affect the next peaks, but you don't expect the first peak to be dominated by any kind nonlinear scale dependence effect. So this is important. Also, another way to, as we mentioned before, another way to measure. Now this will be through, so you want basically, it goes like 100 days first, so you want to go to large scales. And one good way to prove large scale, as we know, is just to go for ISW, so CMB, density tracer correlation. And again, we did a rough estimate, but we assume that we could separate the effect pretty well using this dependence. And for example, this current constraint of about 2-4 sigma, you could, in principle, have a constraint of about 120 in FNL at 1 sigma. Okay, so whereas so it should be compared to the W map current measurement is 100 about 100 at 2 sigma. But I mean, still same ballpark. And for ultimate ISW measurement using a full scale survey, you expect about 7 sigma detection, and this will give you FLM of 400 or 40. Okay. And also, we focused on peak statistics, but you could also think of studying voice statistics, which we haven't done. And for example, Lyman alpha could be a good way to do that. And maybe you can even try to do that with prime data. So this is something we should talk about. Let's start. Yeah.
You mentioned much earlier in the talk, with respect to the voids, you said when FNL gets increased, not only are the largest clusters more massive, but the voids are less empty.
Yes.
Less evolved.
And it's a little, I guess, counterintuitive. You normally think of.
Now, you shift your initial PDF, you shift it this way, right?
You shift your initial PDF.
So you add them to the negative part, you add them. So the negative part of this potential is less negative.
You have extra high density and less latency.
Yeah. So you have less under density, you are more over dense. So it's not
actually that was one thing I did. So is there something like a mass constant for voids?
No, it's a totally it's an interesting field. I think if someone asks you, we're working on that now. Just like there's stuff to do here.
Well,
there are
variants of that. But they're all done. Yeah, there's not a consistent framework.
It's hard to define exactly what you mean by voids.
So just a quick test that you could do with, and I don't know what you could do with DNDN. Okay, so I'm back to the halo point. And this is, for example, the constraint you could have on FNL. You would study the degeneracy with omega using an SPT type survey. Okay, so with reasonable numbers. And you can see that it's pretty hard to measure FNL this way because the effect on alpha on the mass function is not strong enough. This is our prediction, and this is the prediction of Sefuzati et al. Using excitonic projectors. So we have very little tension here. Anyway, it doesn't seem that promising. And the good news is that it's not really a nuisance, like in the sense that omega won't really, like FNM won't really bias your own black energy measurement.
What is the sigma 8 that you assume there?
Sigma 8, I think we took a W, less W naught.
Okay, you get this.
And last question on the halo count is also using the scaling we developed for the mass shift, the mean shift on the variance, you can wonder what would be the right objects to do that. Okay, so in our that, it is correct what we see that what matters actually is sigma m, okay, or sigma m squared. And so, for example, if you could think of high Z weather, which are heavily clustered objects, would be a good probe of this effect. And actually, because their host halo is not really massive, it turns out that it's not very sensitive to FNL. For example, you get only a 2% effect for FNL 500 if you can measure the clustering of quasars at ZF6, okay, which we do actually. And on the other hand, if you take a very massive object like 10 to 15 cluster at ZF1, this same FNL gives you a 25% effect on them. And then the abundance, okay? And okay, I will let you read my summary. And so I think the next thing is, so Amber and Marina had a paper on that. So basically, we have a simple model for non-Gaussianity. So the next question, I think, is what happens when you have, for example, a scale-dependent FNL, which is something I don't really have intuition for. That's it.
So while we ask Olivia questions, we're going to start the next session at 11:30. We don't start it on time, then we're going to never eat lunch. But so people can should feel free to like go get coffee and stuff, but ask questions if you don't start at home. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to make a comment. It's not just the scale dependence, but the description where you use this FNL in terms of quadratic correction. It's actually this particular shape dependence in gas as well, which is actually not canonic. There are lots of models of inflation, which cannot be described
correctly.
Yeah, sure.
It looks like, so what is the constraint, when you do that order of magnitude constraint for SDSS3 numbers, mm-hmm. like Regis 0.7, is it the case that the current SDSS doesn't do a good constraint because it doesn't go far enough in Redshift? So it's not enough volume?
Yeah, not enough volume and not enough scale volume. For a sky, you mean?
For the bot.
I forgot to take that number.
It presumably it's worse scaling than just the square root of the volume. It's because the large scales contribute more power.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's worse than the square root of volume. So you can't just say that we're a square root of 7 worse than SDSS 3 would be.
Yeah. You should expect it's smaller. So on large scale, it should still be.
Because if I believe that, then we should say we should be able to use the current LRG sample, and already if you're going to get 5 times fraction of the sky to the 1/2 power in SDSS 3 with current SDSS, then we should get the square root of 7 worse than that, which is still pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
It.
Well,
actually, something like 10.
Yeah, actually, Nick is looking.
Okay. Somebody should do that because that's
fair.
Who then plonk, they can do something else instead of.
But I'm just coming. I'm
sure. No, it's still the best foreground.
It's true. It's the best measure of the dust map. So.
Which we need.
We do. We seriously need
that. Oh, yeah. I gathered from Nigel that it's pretty hard. These scales are really.
They are hard, yes.
Because, I mean,
no, it will be easier to do those scales.
Yeah.
I still have a big problem understanding this. So this is very non-local. So you have this 1 over k squared with diverges as k goes to 0. So your bars could go negative or something, is that?
Yeah.
The pause become goes to 0 at some point.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's...
It goes like SNL, right? So FNL can be on the side. On the bias can be... it can go negative.
But that's a problem because then you can never cross simulations to do it because so the mass function should be the k equal to 0 limit of bias, should give you k equal to 0 limit of bias because that's total number of galaxies in the universe, that's a 0 mod.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a zero mode, you don't have a k equal to 0 limit because as k goes to 0, everything diverges in this part. So it's,
this formula for k goes to 0, this formula is to be non-valid, right?
So is there a region? What is the range?
This is valid on sub-horizon scale, basically.
Sub-horizon scale.
Yeah, Poisson equation only, it's not, this is reliable.
So then I would say you couldn't trust any sub-horizon simulation.
Why?
Because you have, this non-trivial effect on very large scales. Which is, k. Your formula diverges as k goes to 0.
We don't claim it's correct on this scale. We don't know if you go, if k goes to 0, our formula is definitely non-valid. So it's not the end of the
So it should just add some stuff, right?
Yeah, it should add some stuff.
Oh, you mean a super horizon scale?
Yeah,
so, but so then I thought about the instant horizon simulation, and that's...
The worry is, forgetting about the horizon or not the horizon, as you just increase the size of your box, you know, the modes that you add are always, seem potentially to always be enforced.
When you square it in.
Yeah.
We do plan to just see it, yes.
But this is the serious thing that you know, the limit of k equal to 0 should be the mass function, should come from the mass function. And you cannot get the mass function and a scale dependent bias like this at the same time. So I mean, there is an inconsistency there. Don't you agree that the limit of k equal to 0 is just how many galaxies you have for how much dark matter in independent boxes.
Yeah, but this number is not a constant, right?
So I guess you can never get the mass function, right?
The mass function is different. The amount of variable matter is also not the same, right? When you're very general.
I cannot say it very eloquently, but I think it's something very, very weird.
You realize, Olivier, that if it's...